And it's Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Lori Houston. And tonight, I am very honored to introduce to you Michael Brown, who is the author of Alchemy of the Heart, which is the book that we're going to talk about this evening, as well as The Presence Process. Michael, welcome.
Thank you.
It's really quite a pleasure. I took the time to read your book. I almost read it a second and third time because it was it's a very powerful little book that you've created.
Thank you very much.
Yes. So usually what I do when I start the interviews is I like to have people go through their journey, their own personal journey.
Right.
That kind of got you here to where you are.
Okay. Well, my journey kind of began with a lot of pain. That's what sort of got my attention. And one of the phrases I use or my expressions is that before that I was living a blissfully unconscious life. Mm-hmm. I was in the music industry and really having a good time and living my life. And so, one day I was suddenly struck by an immense amount of pain on the left side of my face. Mm. And that continued to unfold up to 8 times a day in 40-minute sort of periods. And that sort of got my attention because I couldn't do anything about it. And I first started where I think we all start when we have pain, which is really looking at it as something physical. And so I began to treat it through doctors. And then when doctors, I was with the top neurosurgeon in South Africa, and he eventually said to me, you know, this is called such and such. He gave me a name, Horton syndrome or whatever, which to me those names mean I don't know what this is and we don't know what to do about it. And so we tried all the allopathic approaches. None of those were useful. And eventually he said, you know, you're going to have to live with this. And so from that point, I started looking at alternative therapies. I went to witch doctors. I had my wisdom teeth pulled out. I had cortisone injections in my face. I did everything I could physically until I realized at one point that nothing physical was going to impact this. And at that point, I kind of got to a juncture in my journey where I knew I was either going to check in or check out because it was so much pain. I knew I wouldn't be able to live my whole life like this. I wouldn't, you know, I'd many times during the course of the pain, I'd lost my job, I'd lost my girlfriend, I'd lost everything at points. Because it was very difficult for people to be around me when I was in the pain because they couldn't do anything for me, which made them, you know, even more helpless. So at one point, I decided that I was actually sitting in front of a doctor in San Francisco, and I was explaining my condition to the doctor. And while I was explaining my condition, I started to laugh because I realized that I'd had this condition now for 4 or 5 years, and I'd become an authority on it. And now I was trying to explain it to a doctor, and then someone who didn't know anything about it, and then expect them to help me with it when I knew everything about it. And it was around then that I decided to embark on self-healing, although I didn't know what that meant. And that led me kind of into a very mental approach to it, understanding my thinking, and I started looking at my energy and doing metaphysical things. And that did help. It lessened the impact of it, but it didn't help me get to the root of it. And then one day I was introduced to this revelation that underlying every aspect of our human experience is an emotional component that we're pretty much unaware of because we live in sort of a very physical mental existence on this planet. And so I became fascinated with my emotional component, how to become more aware of it, how to start releasing it, because I realized I had an immense amount of suppressed emotional dysfunction within my own being, which is simply fear, anger, and grief. And as I went on the journey of releasing my own suppressed and sedated emotional states, my pain rapidly began to decrease until the point that I completely neutralized the condition and simultaneously had massive insight about the causal point of it. And I realized through that the emotional body and its condition was imprinted by the time we were 7 years old, and that it was the causal point of the quality of our human experience, and that unless we took responsibility for that, we would never be able to take responsibility for the quality of our experience and would continue to expect someone else to be in charge of that part of our life. And that out of that came the presence process, which is how do you consciously take the journey to re-enter an awareness of the authentic condition of the emotional body, not the condition we're showing everyone, which is our nice behavior and our well-behaved behavior, but really what is going on within us? How do we become aware of that in a very responsible, compassionate way? And then once that starts rising into our awareness, how do we start to integrate this in a responsible way, which to empower us to take responsibility for the quality of our experience? Because the quality of our experience, if we all think about it, it's always determined by how we feel about something. You know, if I feel good about something, then it doesn't matter what I'm thinking or doing physically, it's a good experience. If I feel poorly, it doesn't matter what I'm thinking or doing physically, it's a poor experience. And out of that came the presence process. And then, of course, I was very fortunate to hook up with Namaste Publishing. And on publishing the book with Constance Keller, you know, she said to me, would you be prepared to bring this work to people? And that launched another whole adventure, which was coming to the States and trying to find a way in a few hours to explain to someone what I'd gone through in 9 years. And out of that explanation, a way of being able to communicate this work to people in a way that can show them the importance of the emotional body and the fact that they have a capacity to take responsibility for it. Out of that journey came the alchemy of the heart. And so those books support each other in that way.
It's really lovely because it really is a powerful experience if you can get in touch with the feelings. So let's talk a little bit about the book, because we'll get into all of the stuff, I think. Right. Honestly, I'm sure we could do about 3 or 4 more interviews to actually really do the book justice, which, you know, we can do if you'd like, but let's do an introduction anyway now.
Right.
So I love that you do a play on words. I think that's a very unique aspect, and I like how you're using words like realize and intimacy and addiction, and you've kind of pulled them down into their more real part and tried to explain what that meant. Do you want to talk about that?
Yes. Well, you see, we're very hooked in what I discovered is we have 3 sets of eyes, and we have our physical eyes, which we use to interact with the physical world, and which is the eyes that help us perceive form, the nature of form. And then we have our anal eyes, which I call the anal eyes, which is how we analyze everything mentally. And then we have what I call the real eyes, which is the eyes of our perceptual ability of the heart, which is felt perception, but felt perception is multidimensional. So it's not just basically the feeling as we know. There's intuition, there's all levels of knowing that come through the real eyes. That's why we call it realization. And one of the ways of using these words is to try and break our hold on using only our anal eyes to try and comprehend what's going on with us. Because if we only use the anal eyes and analyze everything, we're stuck in the mental, and the emotional is the causal point. So it's fun because I do believe that once you get into language, you'll see that whatever the intelligence is that we call God has an immense sense of humor, and this can be comprehended through the words. And what the wordplay does is, if I say to someone beautiful, and their mental analysis of that will be, you know, appreciation of a form, you know, that it'll be some mental analysis of what the word beautiful means. But if I then say to someone, beautiful, beautiful, then there's a sudden opening that happens there, because the mental body is almost released in that moment. And what happens is a feeling arises. When that happens to you, if I say intimacy and then I say into me and see, into intimacy, it creates a feeling, an opening up into the emotional and vibrational part of our being. But what we then do with our mental body is we immediately say, well, what other words do that, right? Mm-hmm. And then we start to go back into the analysis again. But actually the power of using that tool is not in the what I'm saying or what the words are even saying, but actually in the feeling, that the opening that arises to say, there is more than meets the eye. There is more than we can understand going on here. There's something greater than our mental capacity has ability to grasp.
Mm-hmm. I like that. And I also like that you use vibrational instead of spiritual.
Yes. For me, the word spiritual doesn't really mean anything. I don't have a way of interacting with that word. Mm-hmm. And also it has many different meanings for many different people. And also it's now become part of the, it has a very powerful religious component to it.
Absolutely.
And so it contains a lot of cultural or whatever indoctrination that comes with the word. And so the word vibrational at the moment is still a very neutral word. And what's wonderful about the word vibrational is it also holds within us a clue of how to attain vibrational awareness. And because a vibration is something we feel. We don't think vibration. We feel a vibration. And so it holds the clue that unless I awaken and develop my feeling capacity, unless I free myself of the emotional blockages that are preventing me from fully exploring my feeling capacity, I don't have the capacity to feel fully, and therefore a vast part of my experience, which is the vibrational, is cut off to me. And it's through awakening and developing the capacity to feel that I re-enter the vibrational, not through understanding, not even through doing things, but actually being in the experience and allowing myself to feel it fully is what enables me to awaken vibrational awareness.
Hmm. Well, very well said. Very well said. I also like your restaurant metaphor, because I think that
yes.
gives a very unique perspective on what we do.
Right, right. And that is really showing us that there are different stages of the journey that we move through, and the emphasis is the word through. You know, whenever I come across anyone who says, I found it, this is it, mm-hmm. that to me is a person saying, you know, I'm stuck. or now I'm completely in denial. No, one of the two. So to me, the emphasis of the heart, you see, with the mental body has a beginning and an ending. Everything that we place our mental focus upon has to have a structure, and it has to have a beginning and an ending. The mental body can't comprehend that which has no beginning and that which has no ending. It can't comprehend the phrase forever and ever, amen. It says, well, why do they have two evers there? What's the point of that, right? and when is this going to finish, and what am I going to get out of it, and how long is it going to take? So the restaurant metaphor shows us that we're on a journey. And when we enter the journey of awakening to our awareness or responsibility for our experience, we normally awaken into that journey out of a sense of discomfort. Very few of us move towards God as a response to God. We normally move towards what God is for us as a reaction to our lives. Mm. And what's happening is it's like we're sitting in a restaurant. There's food in front of us. We don't like the food. There are people sitting around talking to us. They annoy and irritate us. The waiter's standing next to us. We are shouting at the waiter because of the quality of the food, even though we know the waiter doesn't cook, right? And it's in that place that we ask the question, why does this keep happening to me? Why do I keep finding myself in a situation that is uncomfortable? And that is when we awaken to the experience of authenticity. And as the word says, authenticity is about discovering who is the author, what is the author of this experience I'm having. And once we start exploring that, we're exploring our childhood imprinting, the condition of our emotional body, etc., etc. From there, we move from the table in the restaurant, we discover the kitchen. And when we enter the kitchen, that begins our journey of integrity. And in this work, integrity is not a moral code. Integrity is about structure. For example, any building has integrity. And if the building is out of integrity, it'll fall over at the slightest deviation of weather. And what gives a building integrity is that the right building materials are used for the right applications when the building is put together. And it's the same in our human experience. It's very important that we go to the certain points of our experience for their right applications. What we often do is we go to the mental body to try and do what only the emotional body can do, or we go to the physical body to try and do what only the emotional body can do. And when we're behaving in that way, we're out of integrity. And so the kitchen part of the experience, we get up out of our seat in the restaurant and we go into the kitchen and we enter this integrity phase, which I also call the metaphysical phase. And the metaphysical phase is where we have appliances, ingredients, recipes, you know, and all these chances. Also, it's a very egoic part of the journey because it's a chance of becoming a master chef. And what we do is once we know when we're in the integrity part of the journey, in the metaphysical part, because we say, I only read books about the kitchen, I only mix with people who do kitchen things, and we drive along in the traffic and we look at other people and we say, well, I'm going to my meeting about the kitchen. When are these people going to wake up and go to a kitchen meeting, right? And so we really love being in the kitchen. And what saves us from being stuck in the kitchen, which is really the mental part of the journey, is our integrity. And our integrity awakens when we realize that the food we're cooking has to be served and has to disappear into quiet conversation and nutrition in order for it to fulfill its purpose. And that our task isn't to be cooking and cooking and cooking, because if we just keep cooking, we're going to spoil the food. If we don't serve it, we're going to spoil it. And so once we come to that realization, we leave the kitchen. We now know the kitchen is there. We can enter it whenever we require to. But then we return into the restaurant and we take a seat at the very table we left when we started our authenticity journey and went into the kitchen. And now we're sitting at the table. We still have food in front of us. We have people around us. The waiter standing next to us. And by all accounts, it looks like we're still where we were when we began the journey. But that's not true, because now we're not reacting to our experience. We're responding to it. And we realize that every aspect of our human experience is a gift that enables us to see deeper into what we are, into what God is for us, and into where we are in any given moment. And that's the intimacy. To when I enter the journey of intimacy, every experience is enabling me to see deeper into the mystery of what I am, what God is for me, and where I am in any given moment. And that, too, is a portal to be moved through into the vibrational journey. But that part of the vibrational journey, it, you know, our task is to get to the emotional integration, which is the intimacy journey. Once we arrive in that portal, we become vulnerable to the vibrational. And the vibrational is given to us. If we take care of the heart part of the journey, which is the intimacy, everything is added unto us. And so that too is a portal, and we'll move through that. And the journey is eternal. So there's no, you know, point of destination that can be comprehended by the mental body.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
So the destination is the journey, really. That's where we get to.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned the three questions. Do you want to go over those again?
Well, the three questions, you know, when we come into the kitchen part of the journey, we often ask the questions that don't serve us. And one of the questions we ask is, who am I? And who is God? And those questions will always lead us to a personality-driven answer, which will come to us through the religion we've been brought up in, the culture we've been brought up in, the racial group we've been brought up in, you know, the society. That's where our answer will come through that lens. And that lens is not going to be the biggest and most expansive answer available to us. And so an appropriate way of approaching that is, instead of saying, who am I, which gives me a personality, I ask, what am I? Mm. And it's the same with, you know, asking, who is God? If I ask, who is God, you know, I'm going to end up with an answer that gives me a somebody who's doing something. In other words, God will be a being who does something, as opposed to being. God is being, right? Mm-hmm. And so asking what is God is to get a more expanded experience come back to me as the answer. And the one question we very seldom ask is, where are we? You know, we just assume we are at our physical location. Whatever my postal address is or my street address is, that's where I am. But really, where are we? You know, and so we've been told, you know, we're in the kingdom. But actually, for most of us, we're in the boredom because there's something, you know, we haven't really developed the capacity to realize, to see with our real eyes where we are. And the wonderful revelation that comes as we ask these questions, because we don't have to answer them. We just have to ask them. It's ask and you will receive, not ask and go and get. When we sit in the question and allow ourselves to ask it, our life experience becomes the answer. And we will realize along the way that the answer to all those three questions is the same. And the closest the mental body can get to, you know, vocalizing what that answer is, to say, you know, I'm a vibration, God is a vibration, I'm in the midst of this profound vibrational experience. So, but for us to be able to perceive that as an experience requires that we develop the capacity to do so. And only the heart has the capacity to answer, that has the perceptual capacity to actually contain the answer to that question, those three questions.
Wow. Okay. Let's talk about the pathway of awareness, which are the 7-year cycles, because I think that's huge, especially the first one,
yes.
Because I think that's where, you know, everything happens.
Right, and I'm so glad you say that that's huge, because I still, you know, I go on my journey of my presentations and do my thing, and very seldom do I have someone come up to me and go, the pathway of awareness? That's huge, right? Because it is so massive when we have the revelation of what that's about. It really shows us the different dimensions of the portal that we use to enter this experience, and the dimensions of the portal that we use to return to vibrational awareness. And it even shows us what's required to make that journey consciously into that reawakening of vibrational awareness. And the pathway of awareness is easiest seen when we observe a child. Mm-hmm. When a child is born, they don't come out the womb and start chatting and say, you know, it's very freaky being upside down for 9 months. I don't know if you do, you know. They don't come out, nor do they come out of the womb and start, you know, doing yoga so they can get their muscles going and stuff. When they come out the womb, they usually emote, whether they're giggling or whether they're, whether they're crying, they use emotion immediately. That's their primary means of awareness, is in the emotional realm. And then they start to use the emotional realm and manipulate it as a means to start communicating or manipulating their experience or participating in the experience, which means they enter mental awareness. And only then do they gain the capacity to stand up on their own 2 feet and walk around independently. And so it goes from emotional through the mental into the physical. And this can be seen even more clearly in what we call the 7-year cycle. In the first 7 years of our life, we are called children, and as children, we are energy in motion. If you ask any parent, their job is to monitor energy in motion, because a child is just this energy moving all over the place, and their task is to take care of that. So it's accepted that we're emotional beings until around the age of 7. Around the age of 7, I say we all get placed in a mental institution. And I call it a mental institution because it's an institution in which we go to begin our vast mental development, the development of our mental body, which we call school. But if we stay in that place, we go mental, right? Mm-hmm. If we stay in the mental realm. By the age of 14, we have pretty much developed the matrix of our mental plane, which we build on for the rest of our life if we so choose. But at the age of 14, we then go through a physiological development, a shift in ourselves physically, and then we begin a very physical approach to our experience in the world. You know, from the age of 14, it's what am I going to do, you know, and how am I going to do it? And then also we become very physically attracted to other beings and start to develop very powerful personal relationships with other beings that are very physical. Mm-hmm. And between the up to the age of 21, that's why we have a 21st birthday, because we celebrate this arrival. And again, we've moved along this pathway from the emotional of childhood through the mental of the teenage years into the physical of the adult years. And as we go through those cycles, we're also imprinting certain experiences into those various aspects of our being. We're actually developing the matrix of our emotional body, of our mental body, and of our physical body. And it all hinges on what's happening in those first 7 years of our emotional body. This pathway of awareness is very important when we embark on the journey of reawakening to our authentic nature, which is vibrational, because it shows us that we need to move from the physical, which is where we are as adults. We're very much in a physical world. Everything matters to us. Literally, it's become matter, not energy in motion. And so returning to the awareness of the vibrational requires reversing that pathway of awareness. And so we first become physically present in our bodies. We often engage in a lot of physical practices. And then we enter mental. We start doing a lot of metaphysical stuff. You know, this is the thought creates, all of that, the law of attraction. That's all the mental body metaphysical work. And then once that mental body is developed to a point, then we will move, it has gained its clarity, then we will move into the emotional work, which is to integrate the emotional signatures placed in us in the first 7 years of our life. And that's where that saying comes from, unless you become as a child, you cannot enter the kingdom. You know, we stay in the boredom unless we re-enter the kingdom consciously. And it's unless we become as a child. In other words, unless I go and attend to the emotional, which was a place which was developed within me in the first 7 years of my life, unless I attend to those that imprinting, then I cannot develop the capacity to experience the vibrational or to realize that I am sitting in the midst of the vibrational right now. So the pathway of awareness is crucial for us to take steps without missing out anything. And often what we do is we do miss out a step in our urgency to, you know, people want to become enlightened, whatever that means. We can tend to miss out a step because what we, even our organizations are called body, mind, and spirit. And that's showing the pathway of awareness, physical, mental, and then leaving out the emotional and trying to go directly to the vibrational. And if we force our way into the vibrational, which we can to a certain extent, we can force ourselves in there through practices. If we do so without integrating what's in the heart, that energy will come back and haunt us at some point, whether it'll be through physical symptom or mental anguish or even emotional behaviors that are out of our control, because we've tried to force our way back into the kingdom without first awakening to the heart's capacity to contain the experience.
Right. And I think that's why also when you go into the actual experiences of fear, anger, grief, you're going the backwards so that you know, because it's very interesting because for the last, I don't know, maybe 15 years of my life, I've always believed that fear was the opposite of love. And so I did everything in my capacity to understand my fears. And so I had to understand them. And yet, you know, as much as I understood them, I would still get triggered. I would still react and it would always be the same ones. So going from fear to then, you know, always being told that I had this anger, but, you know, good girls, they're not supposed to be angry. And, you know, spiritual beings are not supposed to be angry. And so again, I would stuff that down and not even know that it was even there. And then in the last few months, I've gotten to that point where, you know, I understand my fears absolutely. And I've working towards getting the anger, and I'm definitely experiencing what that grief feels like when it's that, you know, not being able to label it or judge it, just knowing that it's there. And then sometimes not being able to get there, even though I know that it would be really good for me to release it right now, but still being aware that, you know, that they're just of those emotions. So let's talk about those because they're incredibly important.
Yes, and also you see that what the mental body says is, I'm ready to do this now, let me just get it done with. And I, you know, my schedule is I have 5 minutes a day to work on my anger, and so by the end of the week I want to be done with my anger, etc., etc. And that's how we are in the mental body, but you see, the mental body isn't God, and the mental body has fooled us that it's God. In fact, we have fooled ourselves that the mental body is God. That's why we say thought creates. We actually attribute the thought part of the journey to being the creator part, which is ridiculous, because God is not a thought. God creates, not thoughts, right? Mm-hmm. And so understanding the role of the emotions is also about understanding the pathway of awareness. You know, in our childhood, because fear is about the physical, anger is related to the mental, and grief is related directly to the emotional component. And so as we go through childhood, really we're going through the grief experience. As we go through the teenager years, we're going through the anger experience. Mm-hmm. And as we enter the adult, we enter the fear experience. By the time we've entered the fear experience, we're now unaware of our anger, and we have no awareness of the amount of grief that we carry. Mm-hmm. And so as we move through the heart, and the heart facilitates us, and this is very hard for us to comprehend because we're such mental beings with all our planning and our schedule. But actually, it's not up to us to enter the heart. The heart allows us in when we have a capacity to do so, and when the people around us are all ready to make that journey. Because when we really enter heart work, it's alchemy. And true alchemy impacts our 3D experience. It's not something happening in isolation of the rest of the world. When we enter this work, we're actually working with many people around us, although we are not aware of it. If we were working in isolation, and I'm going to sort myself out now, and it's only up to me, and I'll do it when I want to do it, that's called, you know, when a cell in the body behaves that way, we call it cancer, right? Mm. And so it's really about being aware that this is a collective journey, and that certain beings are doing certain aspects of the work. Certain beings do the alchemy work. Other people reflect what requires transformation. And so as an adult, we will notice that the primary resonance for adults is fear. And, you know, our world is run by fear at the moment. It's a primary resonance. Mm-hmm. And the fear, in being with our fear, enables me to re-enter my physical body and actually be in my body and not run away into the mental plane of my thoughts, where it's safe, into the story. So the fear, feeling my fear, enables me to re-enter my body. And then once I've re-entered my body, I'm going to gain an awareness of my anger. And my anger, once I am able to sit in my anger, that's going to restore my mental clarity. And once my mental clarity starts becoming restored through integration of the anger, then I'm going to start to feel the real core, which is the grief. And it's sitting in the grief that truly opens and blossoms the emotional body. That's why it says, blessed are those who mourn. Because blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. And what that is telling us is that when I make this journey from my fear through my anger and into my grief, and I allow myself to sit in that grief and be with it as it is, without turning it into light, without moving it through my chakras, without trying to go to my happy place, without doing anything to it, I just allow it to be and I be with it, it develops my capacity to feel to such a point that I start to comprehend how the vibrational aspect of my being, which is what I truly am, what God truly is, and the resonance of where I am, is truly all around and supporting me all the time. And awakening to that revelation is what truly comforts me, because then I know I can never be alone, I'm never lost, the universe is intimately aware of me, it's always giving me what I require if I'm just able to receive that. But that revelation actually comes through the fear, anger, and the grief, not by suppressing or sedating it. So as I mourn, I'm comforted by these revelations. And I call fear, anger, and grief the guardians of the kingdom. They stand at the doorway of heaven, and they say, unless you come through us, you don't have the capacity to stand in the full awareness of the vibrational. Because if you cannot contain your temper, how on earth do you think you're going to contain an awareness of what you really are or what God really is, right? Mm-hmm. So until you can contain your fear and contain your temper and contain your grief, you get to stay on that side. We don't get to give you the keys of the kingdom, because if we give you the keys, if you haven't dealt with your fear, anger, and grief, you're still living in reaction, and a person that's in reaction is always trying to manipulate things to feel comfortable, which is an adult mentality, and nobody wants any adults in heaven. Nobody wants adults in the kingdom. We just want the children there, right? So that's why, unless you become as a child again by going into those first 7 years and consciously participating in responsibly integrating that aspect of our awareness, which enables us to develop the capacity to feel what we are and what God is and where we are without going off balance, without going into reaction, that's the journey through the emotional realm. And when we miss out on the journey of the heart, when we just stay in the mental and try and jump from the mental into the vibrational, we really are depriving ourselves of the sweetest, most juiciest part of the human experience, which is the felt aspect of it.
Mm-hmm. But how do you explain this to people? How do you give them the comfort to say, you know, beyond this fear is probably for a lot of people a huge anger. And then beyond the anger is this incredibly vulnerable grief. How do you express this to people in a way that they, you know, can embrace it so that they
well,
can do
first
it?
First of all, only those who are ready to enter the journey will be receptive to anything that has to be said about it. And it's not everyone on the planet. And so the in my way of being is this: I'm not going to try and save anybody from their experience, because their experience is valid. Whatever their experience is right now, it's absolutely valid. They may not just realize that, but eventually, you know, so people will realize at some point that their experience is valid. I know that I am taken care of within. I know that there is something within me that brought me upon this journey and that has guided me all the way. And I also absolutely know that that presence is in every single human being and every single living creature on the earth. And I do not have to do its work for it. It knows when someone is ready, and it brings someone to the heart work when they are ready. So there's no need to go and convert anyone to heart work. What happens is when someone is ready, that presence within them will cause them to seek out the best way for them to approach the work. And there's more than one way to approach it. You know, this the presence process and alchemy of the heart is a way. It's not the way of anything. It's a way. There are many people on the planet that are receiving insight about the power of the emotional component of our experience and are inviting themselves into it, and through their experience of it, you know, being portals to invite other people into it. So in my journey, it's never been about trying to go and explain this to people, because there's no point in speaking to people that are deaf to it. What I have simply done is, you know, in my journey, is make myself available and said, here I am. If you want to hear about this, then come to whatever's going on here and we can have this conversation. And I know that the only people that will show up in that room or actually get to the website or actually get a copy of the book in their hands will be those that are ready for the work. And it's true that many people do this work and they see the power of it, and then they buy 6 books and they give it to all their family and the books sit on the shelf. Mm-hmm. Because you can't make someone enter their fear when they're not ready to. I will not enter my fear for you or anybody else. I will not enter my anger for you or anybody else. I will not enter my grief for you or anybody else. I will only enter it when I'm allowed in by my own heart. And my heart knows when I'm ready and if that is the intent of my journey in this lifetime. And so I, as an individual, do not know what the intent of someone's journey is. All I say is I'm available, you know, in my presentations or with like these interviews. I have full confidence that who's ever listening to this program is doing so because they're ready to hear this and they'll be responsive to it. A person who isn't supposed to, their inner presence would have taken them off to go and do something else right in this moment. And I trust that part of myself, and that's why I trust that part in everybody else.
Nicely said. Let's talk about the turning point, because we kind of went and jumped ahead, but let's go back a wee bit and talk about, you know, what is the turning point, the authentic embrace of personal responsibility, because it kind of fits in here.
The turning point, what do you mean by that? Just
the authentic embrace of personal responsibility.
Yeah, the embrace of responsibility comes when we realize that the causal points are human experience, that in the first 7 years we are imprinted with experiences that cause our emotional body to work in a certain way in patterns of resistance. And these patterns of resistance create friction within our energy body. This friction creates a heat. We then call this heat fear, anger, and grief, and those are different ways we spell the heat. And this fear, anger, and grief is then reflected back to us through our body symptoms. Symptom also is a great word. It means some time, a piece of unintegrated time from our childhood. Mm-hmm. And it's also reflected back to us through our interactions with other human beings in which there's fear, anger, and grief. And in how we see the world as a palette that contains fear, anger, and grief that upsets us. And so the responsibility comes through the revelation that the entire quality of my human experience is being determined by the quality of the lens of my emotional body. That if there is fear in my emotional body, then when I look through that lens at the world, I see a fearful world. I myself am fearful. And when I don't take care of that fear, if I'm unable to be with that fear, I'm going to suppress and sedate it, which leads to reactive behavior, which can lead to symptoms and all sorts of things. The turning point is when I realize that it is my sole responsibility, S-O-U-L, my sole responsibility, to re-enter my emotional body and to gain an awareness of its authentic condition and to gradually allow myself to feel those points of resistance so that they can flow freely again. And that will then be reflected, that free flowing or that release or that integration will then be reflected in my mental state and then in my physical circumstances. And it's very easy to show that feeling is our responsibility. If you say to me, Michael, I'm going away for 2 weeks, won't you house sit for me? I can do that for you, and I can do physical things for you. I can feed your dog and your cat and take out the trash and bring your mail in and all sorts of things. You can also say to me, Michael, I'm going away. Can you house sit for me? And there's some tasks I need you to mentally take care of. In other words, I need you to explain this to that person. Someone's going to come. Can you just read this information? I can do mental things on your behalf. I can even stand up in a court of law and speak mentally on your behalf and communicate mentally on your behalf. But you can't say to me, Michael, I'm going away for 2 weeks. Won't you feel for me while I'm gone? Right? Because no one can feel for us. And because the integration process of the emotional body requires feeling its authentic condition, that is my sole responsibility. I cannot hand that part of the work over to another. And so the first step is to realize the role the emotional body plays in the quality of my, not only of my human experience, but in my capacity to have a direct experiential relationship with what I really am, my authentic vibrational self, and with what God is. Once I realize the role of the emotional body, then the turning point is when I say, okay, I'm going to commit to doing whatever it takes to grow up emotionally, because that's really what it's about. Between the ages of 7, most men stop emotional growth at 7 years old, and we can see this by our world leaders. It's pretty damn obvious, right? Most women will develop emotionally till about 14. They will go on roughly 14, and then it'll start slowing down, stopping, because women are, girls are allowed to be emotional longer than boys. And so they may have, that's why, for example, a 13-year or 14-year-old girl is often more mature than a 13 or 14-year-old boy, because maturity is emotional. It's not mental or physical. We can see we have leaders that have gone through mental institutions as far as development is concerned, and they've also done lots of, you know, physical experience. But when it comes to the crunch, they still behave like 7-year-old boys in a place, you know, in a playing field, wanting to beat each other up. And that's the lack of emotional development. And so taking responsibility for our human experience really is about saying, I'm going to choose to grow up emotionally now. I'm actually going to grow that part of myself up. And you can't hurry through it, because the emotional growth is organic. It's like a plant. You can't just, you know, put yourself on a schedule and do it by that. It's going to unfold organically, and it will be facilitated and overseen by the heart itself. The heart knows what it requires. We have to just surrender to and listen to it. And that's part of the journey.
Mm-hmm. But it is empowering to know that we are the one that's responsible for this journey and our own growth.
It is, to me, what authentic self-empowerment is. Because one of my turning points was when I realized that my experience was my teacher. Mm-hmm. And that if I could read my experience just as it was unfolding, I could read what was going on with me and what was required in my journey. And so in that moment, I unhooked from books as my teachers, and I unhooked from other human beings as my teachers. And I said, okay, let my experience be my teaching. My experience is the light. My experience is the way. Unless I enter full, direct encounter with my experience, I will not develop the vibrational capacities that will teach me what I am, you know, reveal to me what I am and what God is for me. And so that, to me, is when we really enter authentic self-facilitation. And the funny thing about this journey is this part of the work we can only do alone, because we can't feel for each other. And in order to integrate my fear, anger, and grief, I have to be able to sit with my fear by myself and comfort myself. I have to be able to sit with my anger by myself and comfort myself. I have to be able to sit with my grief by myself and comfort myself. And it's through that that I awaken, you know, all capacities. But the awesome thing about doing this work on my own is the more intimate I become with my own heart, then the more intimate I become with every other human and the experience they're having. So the portal into intimacy with all other human beings is when I enter the portal of my own heart.
And so then we can realize that we are not the experience we're having, but we are having an experience.
Absolutely. And that enables us to be with things as they are, and not to try and manipulate things. You know, constantly trying to manipulate things. Also, wherever we anchor our awareness determines the species we are. And when I say species, you know, species is determined by a sort of world that they're manifesting. And so when we anchor ourselves in the physical world, when we are very physically transfixed, we try and accumulate everything in the physical world. We try and get everything we require from the physical world, and we tend to then manipulate the physical world to accomplish that, and we end up hurting nature and hurting ourselves and hurting each other. It's the same as if we anchor ourselves only in the mental world. We also can become very hurtful beings, because in the mental world, we can mentally justify anything. We can justify anything, and so we can hurt the earth, we can hurt others, because we can justify it mentally. But when we anchor our awareness in the heart through self-perception, it transforms us into a different species, because then we become aware of the impact our presence has on the experience of this world. In other words, when I have developed felt experience, I can feel the impact of my thoughts, words, and deeds even before I put them into play. And there's a saying that says, where there is love, there is no law. And the reason we need laws at the moment for humanity is because humanity is devoid of felt perception. We can't feel the consequence of our presence in this world and the impact we're having on other beings around us. And because we can't feel that, someone has to make up rules for our behavior. But once we develop our felt capacities, I will know that if I'm intending to hurt you, I feel the hurt. And that will oversee my behavior. My heart will oversee my behavior in a way that I tread lightly on the earth, take care of others, because I realize when I'm taking care of others and I'm in service to others, really I'm just being that way with myself. That I'm going to feel that resonance. And I will also see when I have felt perception that when I'm manipulating others for profit or when I'm trying to, get something done in a way that is hurtful, I'm going to feel that pain. Mm-hmm. And so I will back away from that behavior and look for another way of being, because I don't think anyone voluntarily wants to be hurt, wants mm-hmm. to feel pain, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just that we can't feel at the moment, and so we don't know how much pain we're in because of our behavior on this planet. And assisting our planet is about developing our felt capacity. If we, this is a good way to explain it to the listener, the importance of the emotional body and its awakening and awakening to the heart. It's not that we have to open our heart. It's about opening to the heart. And when our heart is closed, when our felt perception is shut down, we believe we have to make peace in this world. And the idea that we have to make peace is delusional, because there is only peace on this planet. This planet is cushioned in peace. Peace was created. But when we cannot feel peace, because, we have to feel peace to know peace. We mm-hmm. say, I feel at peace. We don't say, I think peace or I do peace. We say, I feel peace. But when my feeling capacities are shut down because I'm in pain and I'm sedating and controlling an awareness of that pain from my awareness and therefore shutting down my capacity to feel by doing that, then I will do things to try and make peace. I'll try and rearrange the world. And I will send armies into places to force peace on others, because I believe that peace is a physical arrangement.
Mm.
And also, when we cannot feel, we believe peace is a mental concept. And so we will come together with peace organizations and we'll sit and talk and discuss peace until we have an agreement. And then we'll sign that agreement and say there shall be peace. But peace has never, ever, ever come out of an agreement, because peace is not a mental concept. And everyone who's trying to achieve peace physically or mentally is delusional. It's a delusional behavior, because peace is a vibration. It's of the vibrational. And unless I can feel that vibration, I can never realize it. And for example, the whole of the Middle East and the whole of Iraq is embraced in peace. Because all we have to do is take all the human beings away from those areas. And if you stroll there, you'd see how wonderfully peaceful it is. It's not about making the peace or coming to an agreement to enforce peace. It's about developing the capacity to realize the peace. And that capacity, what's obscuring the peace, is the lens of the emotional body, which is covered in fear, anger, and grief, and causing us to perceive what is purely vibrational as fear, anger, and grief. That has to be resolved, come to resolution, has to be integrated. And through the integration process, we also develop the capacity of felt perception. It enables us to feel the peace. And when I can feel peace, I'm not going to go messing with anybody else and trying to convince them about anything and trying to make them agree with me, because I feel the peace. Mm-hmm. And as much as I feel it and it radiates from within my experience, those around me will have a chance of feeling it too. So it begins, peace begins with my own heart. That is the place it begins. If it doesn't begin there, then it will never be authentically realized.
Wow. And I think I'd like to leave it with the last point, which I think is probably the most controversial, which is the pursuit of happiness, because I think many of us believe that that's what we're striving for.
Yes, the pursuit of happiness. Well, the word happiness is another one of those words that means happening. It means something must happen so I feel better or right about being. That's all it means. I cannot be unless something happens. And that determining what happens is dependent on what makes me feel good. And so I have certain feelings that I want and certain feelings that I don't want, because certain things will happen and I don't feel good about that, so I don't want that to happen. So I push those feelings away and I move towards other feelings. The work of the heart is not about happiness. It's not about the pursuit of happiness, because the pursuit of happiness is just that. It's a race for a particular feeling. This work is about joy. This work is about the realization of joy. And joy is not even an joy can be real, can be realized emotionally. It can be realized mentally. We can talk about joy. It can be perceived physically in the world. We can perceive a person behaving joyfully. But joy is not an emotion. Joy is a relationship that I have with my emotional body, a relationship in which I allow myself to feel everything, and that every feeling I'm having is seen as valid, and I do not interfere with it, because I know the more I'm able to feel, the more unfamiliar feelings I embrace and be with, the more I develop my capacity of felt perception, my vocabulary of feeling, and the more I develop my vocabulary of feeling, the more I'm able to have a conversation, a direct conversation with the vibrational aspect of myself, with whatever God is for me, and to be able to feel fully the resonance of this experience I'm having. So joy is about feeling everything, not just feeling good, but feeling everything and being prepared to open up that much. Joy is about saying, I'm opened. In fact, it's about saying, I'm no longer open to being closed. It's about opening to everything, you know, and being prepared to face the uncomfortable feelings and saying, why am I closed there? Can I open to that now?
So we need to redefine what joy is.
Yes, and we need to, you know, the United States needs to say it's not a pursuit of happiness now. The realization of joy would be wonderful. And also not about the American dream, because dreams are only for sleeping people. How about, you know, the American vision? Imagine if it was the American vision as opposed to the American dream. I think a lot of people would just start waking up, you know.
Is it as simple as that? Great.
Well, it's very, our words are very important because they are spells. That's why we learn how to spell them. They cast spells on us when we use words. It's very important to be conscious about the words we use and what am I really saying when I'm using this word, right? It's about being really conscious with our word. We say, you know, there's, in the mental, it's in the beginning was the word, but the word is very powerful. The word is not really an analytical group of letters. It's not really an accumulation of letters. The word is a vibration, and it's coming from the vibrational. And so it's about awakening to the word as the capacity to, you know, when we say, I love you, it's very different to get out of my face. Right? These are just different vibrations, right? You know? Or, you know, I accept responsibility is very different to you are to blame for my experience. They have very different vibrations. They're just words, but actually they're just sounds. But these sounds have power because they're audible resonances coming from within the vibrational.
Right. Very powerful.
And that's the heart. See, the heart gives us all of this. All this that we've discussed together here comes through the heart. This is what the heart is waiting to deliver to humanity, this awareness.
Wow. Well, Michael, what a honor this has been, and I'm very grateful that you, you know, chose to come onto my show. Do you want to tell people how they can get a hold of you?
They can get a hold of me through www.namastepublishing.com. And my own website is called The Presence Portal, T-H-E, PRESENCEPORTAL, www.thepresenceportal.com. And there's a whole lot of free stuff there that people can go, and free audios, internet interviews, all sorts of stuff that they can go on and really explore this work, and it will support them when they're moving through it. It will enable them to really facilitate themselves through this journey.
Hmm. Wow. Well, as I said, it's been a great honor, and I would love to have you back. I'd love to even, you know, review the presence process with you, because I think that would be a wonderful option as well. But I think we could do a couple more interviews on this book, because I think that's such a depth of knowledge there that people are really craving for at this time.
Well, let's open to that and see what happens.
Okay. There you go. You heard it here. All right. Well, it's been, like I said, an honor, and I appreciate the time that you've given us. So thank you very much.
It's been a wonderful conversation. Thank you for having me on your program.
Hmm. Okay. So that is this evening's show, and we'll see you next week.